Chapter 47. The father of the Marshalsea in two or three relations, the brothers William and Frederick Dorrit, walking up and down the college yard of course on the aristocratic or pump side, for the father made it a point of his state to be chary of going among his children on the poor side, except on Sunday mornings, Christmas days, and other occasions of ceremony, in the observance whereof he was very punctual, and at which times he laid his hand upon the heads of their infants, and blessed those young insolvents with a benignity that was highly edifying the brothers, walking up and down the college yard together, were a memorable sight. Frederick the Free was so humbled, bowed, withered, and faded. William the Bond was so courtly, condescending, and benevolently conscious of a position, that in this regard only, if in no other, the brothers were a spectacle to wonder at. They walked up and down the yard on the evening of Little Dorrit's Sunday interview with her lover on the iron bridge. The cares of state were over for that day, the drawing room had been well attended, several new presentations had taken place, the 3 and 6 pence accidentally left on the table had accidentally increased to 12 shillings, and the father of the Marshalsea refreshed himself with a whiff of cigar. As he walked up and down, affably accommodating his step to the shuffle of his brother, not proud in his superiority, but considerate of that poor creature, bearing with him, and breathing toleration of his infirmities in every little puff of smoke that issued from his lips and aspired to get over the spiked wall, he was a sight to wonder at. His brother Frederick of the dim eye, palsied hand, bent form, and groping mind, submissively shuffled at his side, accepting his patronage as he accepted every incident of the labyrinthian world in which he had got lost. He held the usual screwed bit of whitey-brown paper in his hand, from which he ever and again unscrewed a spare pinch of snuff. That falteringly taken, he would glance at his brother not unadmiringly, put his hands behind him, and shuffle on so at his side until he took another pinch, or stood still to look about him perchance suddenly missing his clarionet. The college visitors were melting away as the shades of night drew on, but the yard was still pretty full, the collegians being mostly out, seeing their friends to the lodge. As the brothers paced the yard, William the Bond looked about him to receive salutes, returned them by graciously lifting off his hat, and, with an engaging air, prevented Frederick the Free from running against the company, or being jostled against the wall. The collegians as a body were not easily impressible, but even they, according to their various ways of wondering, appeared to find in the two brothers a sight to wonder at. "You are a little low this evening, Frederick," apostrophe said the father of the Marshalsea. "Anything the matter?" Apostrophe, "the matter?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, he stared for a moment, and then dropped his head and eyes again. "No, William, no. Nothing is the matter. Apostrophe, if you could be persuaded to smarten yourself up a little, Frederick, apostrophe, I. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the old man hurriedly. "But I can't be. Don't talk so. That's all over." Apostrophe, the father of the Marshalsea glanced at a passing collegian with whom he was on friendly terms, as who should say, "An enfeebled old man, this, but he is my brother, sir, my brother, and the voice of nature is potent." Apostrophe, apostrophe, and steered his brother clear of the handle of the pump by the threadbare sleeve. Nothing would have been wanting to the perfection of his character as a fraternal guide, philosopher and friend, if he had only steered his brother clear of ruin, instead of bringing it upon him. "I think, William," apostrophe said the object of his affectionate consideration, "that I am tired, and will go home to bed." "Apostrophe, my dear Frederick," apostrophe returned the other, "don't let me detain you. Don't sacrifice your inclination to me." Apostrophe, late hours, and a heated atmosphere, and ears, I suppose, apostrophe said Frederick, "weaken me." Apostrophe, my dear Frederick, apostrophe returned the father of the Marshalsea, "do you think you are sufficiently careful of yourself? Do you think your habits are as precise and methodical as, shall I say, as mine are? Not to revert again to that little eccentricity which I mentioned just now, I doubt if you take air and exercise enough, Frederick. Here's the parade, always at your service. Why not use it more regularly than you do? Apostrophe, apostrophe, ha! Apostrophe, apostrophe, sigh to the other. Yes, 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 yes. Apostrophe, but it is of no use saying yes, yes, my dear Frederick, apostrophe, the father of the Marshalsea in his mild wisdom persisted, unless you act on that assent. Consider my case, Frederick. I am a kind of example. Necessity and time have taught me what to do. At certain stated hours of the day, you will find me on the parade, in my room, in the lodge, reading the paper, receiving company, eating, and drinking. I have impressed upon Amy during many years that I must have my meals, for instance, punctually. Amy has grown up in the sense of the importance of these arrangements, and you know what a good girl she is. Apostrophe, the brother only sighed again, as he plodded dreamily along, ha! Yes, 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 yes. Apostrophe, my dear fellow, apostrophe, said the father of the Marshalsea, laying his hand upon his shoulder, and mildly rallying him mildly, because of his weakness. Poor dear soul, you said that before, and it does not express much, Frederick, even if it means much. I wish I could rouse you, my good Frederick. You want to be roused. Apostrophe, yes, William, yes. No doubt, apostrophe, returned the other, lifting his dim eyes to his face. But I am not like you. Apostrophe, the father of the Marshalsea said, with a shrug of modest self-depreciation, oh, you might be like me, my dear Frederick. You might be, if you chose. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and forbore, in the magnanimity of his strength, to press his fallen brother further. There was a great deal of leave-taking going on in corners, as was usual on Sunday nights, and here and there in the dark, some poor woman, wife or mother, was weeping with a new collegian. The time had been when the father himself had wept, in the shades of that yard, as his own poor wife had wept. But it was many years ago, and now he was like a passenger aboard ship in a long voyage, who has recovered from seasickness, and is impatient of that weakness in the fresher passengers taken aboard at the last port. He was inclined to remonstrate, and to express his opinion, that people who couldn't get on without crying, had no business there. In manner, if not in words, he always testified his displeasure at these interruptions of the general harmony, and it was so well understood, that delinquents usually withdrew, if they were aware of him. On this Sunday evening, he accompanied his brother to the gate with an air of endurance and clemency, being in a bland temper and graciously disposed to overlook the tears. In the flaring gaslight of the lodge, several collegians were basking, some taking leave of visitors, and some who had no visitors, watching the frequent turning of the key, and conversing with one another, and with Mr. Chivery. The paternal entrance made a sensation, of course, and Mr. Chivery, touching his hat in a short manner, though with his key, hoped he found himself tolerable. Thank you, Chivery, quite well. And you? Apostrophe, Mr. Chivery said in a low growl, oh, he was all right. Apostrophe, which was his general way of acknowledging inquiries after his health when a little sullen. I had a visit from young John today, Chivery. And very smart he looked, I assure you. Apostrophe, so Mr. Chivery had heard. Mr. Chivery must confess, however, that his wish was that the boy didn't lay out so much money upon it. For what did it bring him in? It only brought him in vexation. And he could get that anywhere for nothing. How vexation, Chivery? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the benignant father. No odds, apostrophe, returned Mr. Chivery. Never mind. Mr. Frederick going out? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, Chivery, my brother is going home to bed. He is tired, and not quite well. Take care, Frederick, take care. Good night, my dear Frederick. apostrophe apostrophe, shaking hands with his brother, and touching his greasy hat to the company in the lodge, Frederick slowly shuffled out of the door which Mr. Chivery unlocked for him. The father of the Marshalsea showed the amiable solicitude of a superior, being that he should come to no harm. Be so kind as to keep the door open a moment, Chivery, that I may see him go along the passage and down the steps. Take care, Frederick.
He is very infirm.
Mind the steps.
He is so very absent.
Be careful how you cross, Frederick.
I really don't like the notion of his going wandering at large. He is so extremely liable to be run over.
Apostrophe, with these words, and with a face expressive of many uneasy doubts and much anxious guardianship, he turned his regards upon the assembled company in the lodge, so plainly indicating that his brother was to be pitied for not being under lock and key, that an opinion to that effect went round among the collegians assembled. But he did not receive it with unqualified assent. On the contrary, he said, "No, gentlemen, no. Let them not misunderstand him. His brother Frederick was much broken, no doubt, and it might be more comfortable to himself,
the father of the Marshalsea,
to know that he was safe within the walls. Still, it must be remembered that to support an existence there during many years required a certain combination of qualities. He did not say high qualities, but qualities, moral qualities. Now, had his brother Frederick that peculiar union of qualities? Gentlemen, he was a most excellent man, a most gentle, tender, and estimable man, with the simplicity of a child. But would he, though unsuited for most other places, do for that place? No, he said confidently, no. And, he said, heaven forbid that Frederick should be there in any other character than in his present voluntary character. Gentlemen, whoever came to that college, to remain there a length of time, must have strength of character, to go through a good deal, and to come out of a good deal. Was his beloved brother Frederick that man? No. They saw him, even as it was, crushed. Misfortune crushed him. He had not power of recoil enough, not elasticity enough, to be a long time in such a place, and yet preserve his self-respect and feel conscious that he was a gentleman. Frederick could not,
if he might use the expression,
power enough to see in any delicate little attentions and testimonials that he might under such circumstances receive the goodness of human nature, the fine spirit animating the collegians as a community, and at the same time, no degradation to himself, and no depreciation of his claims as a gentleman. Gentlemen, God bless you. Such was the homily with which he improved and pointed the occasion to the company in the lodge, before turning into the sallow yard again, and going with his own poor shabby dignity past the collegian in the dressing gown who had no coat, and past the collegian in the seaside slippers who had no shoes, and past the stout greengrocer collegian in the corduroy knee breeches who had no cares, and past the lean clerk collegian in buttonless black who had no hopes, up his own poor shabby staircase to his own poor shabby room. There, the table was laid for his supper, and his old gray gown was ready for him on his chair back at the fire. His daughter put her little prayer book in her pocket that she'd been praying for pity on all prisoners and captives, and rose to welcome him. Uncle had gone home then, she asked that sign as she changed his coat, and gave him his black velvet cap. Yes, Uncle had gone home. Had her father enjoyed his walk? Why, not much, Amy, not much. No. Did he not feel quite well? As she stood behind him, leaning over his chair so lovingly, he looked with downcast eyes at the fire. An uneasiness stole over him that was like a touch of shame, and when he spoke, as he presently did, it was in an unconnected and embarrassed manner. Something, I don't know what, has gone wrong with Chivery. He is not nearly so obliging and attentive as usual tonight. It's a little thing, but it puts me out, my love. It's impossible to forget, apostrophe turning his hands over and over and looking closely at them, that him. That in such a life as mine, I am unfortunately dependent on these men for something every hour in the day. Apostrophe, her arm was on his shoulder, but she did not look in his face while he spoke. Bending her head she looked another way. I am. I can't think, Amy, what has given Shivery offense. He is generally so very attentive and respectful. And tonight he was quite short with me. Other people there too. Why, good heaven, if I was to lose the support and recognition of Shivery and his brother officers, I might starve to death here. Apostrophe while he spoke, he was opening and shutting his hands like valves, so conscious all the time of that touch of shame, that he shrunk before his own knowledge of his meaning. Aha! I can't think what it's owing to. I am sure I cannot imagine what the cause of it is. There was a certain Jackson here once, a turnkey of the name of Jackson.
I don't think you can remember him, my dear. You were very young,
and him. And he had a brother, and this young brother paid his addresses to at least, did not go so far, as to pay his addresses to, but respectfully admired the not daughter, the sister of one of us, a rather distinguished collegian, I may say, very much so. His name was Captain Martin, and he consulted me on the question whether it was necessary that his daughter's sister should hazard offending the turnkey brother by being too plain with the other brother. Captain Martin was a gentleman and a man of honor, and I put it to him first to give me his own opinion. Captain Martin,
highly respected in the army,
then unhesitatingly said that it appeared to him that his sister was not called upon to understand the young man too distinctly, and that she might lead him on. I am doubtful whether lead him on was Captain Martin's exact expression. Indeed, I think he said, tolerate him on her father's, I should say, brother's account. I hardly know how I have strayed into this story. I suppose it has been through being unable to account for Shivery, but as to the connection between the two, I don't see apostrophe. His voice died away, as if she could not bear the pain of hearing him, and her hand had gradually crept to his lips. For a little while there was a dead silence and stillness. And he remained shrunk in his chair, and she remained with her arm round his neck, and her head bowed down upon his shoulder. His supper was cooking in a saucepan on the fire, and, when she moved, it was to make it ready for him on the table. He took his usual seat, she took hers, and he began his meal. They did not, as yet, look at one another. By little and little he began, laying down his knife and fork with a noise, taking things up sharply, biting at his bread, as if he were offended with it, and in other similar ways showing that he was out of sorts. At length he pushed his plate from him, and spoke aloud, with the strangest inconsistency. What does it matter whether I eat or starve? What does it matter whether such a blighted life as mine comes to an end now, next week, or next year? What am I worth to anyone? A poor prisoner. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.